Hello, Virgo, and welcome to part two of your 2015-2016 birthday reading. My name is Eric, still, and today it's now Wednesday, the 9th of September, and I'm here to continue our discussion and to bring Saturn and then the Saturn-Neptune square more clearly into the mix. But first I want to mention that over a very long period of time, we could even say going back to the mid-1990s. So that's 20 years, and some of you are not quite that old to remember that, and for some of you it's ancient history. But it is time that happened, and even if you're very young, it was representative of when you were born, and that is that your fourth house, the house that represents one's home base, security base, physical home, one's experience of one's family history as an adult, the way the family history has shaped the emotional body as an adult. In other words, the experiences that you had in your family of origin that then shaped your emotional consciousness as an adult. That whole house, the fourth, Sagittarius, has been very busy the past 20 years. Crazy to say that. I know most astrologers don't go back 20 years, this is supposed to be sun sign astrology, but what I'm saying is that this has shaped you in a way and created an expectation of instability. And this has actually been strengthening. I mean, there's a few ways to respond to the expectation of instability, and one is to be constantly insecure, but then after a while, at a certain point, you have to come around to the recognition that you are the source of your own security, that you are the basis of your basically your own safety on the planet, and this may involve you and your relationship to whatever spiritual agency that you regard as your higher power, if you believe in that kind of a thing, and if you just internally trust your own beingness, your own original instructions, your own dharma, whatever it might be. Nonetheless, there has been a challenge here, and that challenge is now shifting. There has been, over the past couple of years, a vitally important, palpable shift away from this kind of rocky inner turmoil. And what's happening now, it's about to happen over the next few days, is that Saturn arrives in your fourth house. Saturn is about to make its ingress into Sagittarius. It's just looming in the last degree of Scorpio, and I'm watching the charts every day, and I have never seen a planet seem to move so slowly through one degree of the zodiac. And I mean, I like really slow moving planets, but jeepers, Saturn, it is an illusion of some kind. Its daily motion has got to be faster than Pluto, but it is taking forever to get there, and it's going to get there on the 17th. A busy day, kind of an honorary threshold day for you. And here's what that is basically about. When Saturn enters an angular house, in my view, there is a clean sweep possible. Saturn is often said to be an agent of solidifying, of stability, of things slowing down. And that is true. Under certain conditions, on a certain level. But it is also true that Saturn is one of the most dependable agents of change, and sometimes, as in your case, that agent of change can be about clearing the decks of a lot of previous emotional jetsam and flotsam from these years, from the kind of tumultuous scenarios of recent years and not so recent years, and it's a way of clearing your emotional body. Let's just put it that way. I mean, it's every now and then it's nice to do a kind of a purge or a fast or a cleanse or to move. That's a big one. I mean, I know that moving is really annoying, but few people don't just love that feeling of your space taking a new shape. And having gone through that whole process of getting rid of everything that you don't need and giving things to charity and tossing things that just don't serve you anymore. And so it's as if Saturn is helping you go through that entire process of cleansing out a kind of ancestral emotional home and coming to terms with something that is, I would say, wildly unusual in any description of Virgo, which is the way in which your true underlying spiritual home is the cosmos itself. By that I mean that when you are in a state of mind where you can experience some genuine clarity, and when you can feel all the way through to the bottom of who you are, you may notice that there is a kind of a window that you can look through and go through. There's an old Paul McCartney album. Maybe I'll attach it to the reading page. Just jot that down. It's called Back to the Egg. It's a pretty good album. It's not Band on the Run, but it's groovy, and it came out around 1980, and the album cover is Wings, the band Wings, of five members, and they're in this house, and they've rolled back the carpet. They've rolled back this sort of oriental rug, and it reveals a window in the floor, and down through the floor is an opening into another universe, and so it's as if they're in a spacecraft, and there's a porthole, big porthole facing down. That's you. I say this because the two most profound deep space points that are readily accessible in astrology, the galactic center and the great attractor, are in your fourth house. And so when you're done with all of the family drama and sorting out various sides of the family, and as my friend Paloma is fond of saying, cleaning the tree and getting clear about your background and working through all your neuroses and like the things that people do and seem to want to do that, when you reach a point of clarity, then you can roll back that rug. And I would say that even before you reach that point of clarity, it's really healthy to know that there is this larger space that you contain. Now, Saturn is going to come through that larger space and, first of all, call your attention to it. That's what Saturn does when Saturn goes anywhere. The first thing, if you want to know what a Saturn transit is, just think Saturn calls attention to that house and sign, and then there's a process involved, and that is typically a process of clearing. And so there has been a kind of organic clearing because planets have been rapidly leaving your fourth house. Numerous outer planets, most of them with names that no mortal has heard, have been clearing out of your fourth. Pluto came through between 1994 and 2007, a very long 2007, right? It's still in Sag when Obama's elected in 2008. So there's a long phase of Pluto going through there, and then many other Pluto-like planets. And this has assured you of that potential for deeper contact. And now comes Saturn, sort of a mundane utility, saying, all right, and let's get the rest of this stuff out of here. And behold, you are about to enter a clear space emotionally. And if that itself is not just going to happen by itself, you have the gift of, prerogative of, the ability to take this next couple of years and really finish sweeping out, digging out, cleaning out the basement. Now, even as that happens, even as that is proceeding, you have reached a point where you've been able to extract something of your true origins, your true nature. Again, might think of this as what's been referred to as your original instructions or your original choices and dharma and intentions for coming to this plane of reality in this lifetime. And this has given you the ability to identify with that fully. So let's go back and reconsider what Jupiter in your first house means in light of that going deeper and making contact with what I will call, perhaps reluctantly, for lack of better words, your true spiritual essence. Jupiter is the ruling planet of Sagittarius, and Jupiter is in your first house, and Jupiter is saying, here is what it feels like to be this original person that you came here to be. Here is the essence of what you are presented to you in a clear way that you can embody. The beauty of a planet in your own sign, especially when we're working with that as your primary significator, Virgo, is that you can embody that. And so when Jupiter is in your house and you're embodying in your home, in your first house, embodying that, you get something from the fourth house, Sag, coming up where you can access it and consider it and process it and moreover be that. So there's two things going on with Jupiter in your first. One is it represents your relational partners and is giving you an ability to resonate with them. But there's something, right, because Pisces in the seventh house. But now we'll consider that Jupiter also represents Sagittarius in your fourth house. And that, too, is the ability to resonate, to vibrate, to hold space open for who you really are and where you've really come from. And so one thing to remember is that however big or potent or powerful or influential your relationship partners might seem, you are bigger. You must maintain that sense of scale and not allow yourself to ever feel dwarfed. At the very least, feel like, well, I'm equal in potential. I am equal in accomplishment on whether it's a mundane level or not. You have come here, you have arrived, you have done vast amount of personal work, and that grants you an ability to stand on level ground with the people around you. So this process of Jupiter and Saturn changing signs in a very similar phase of time and making a series of squares as well is a multiple level process. And you could say that the essence of that multiple level process is your feeling like you are strong enough to be in your relationships, like your security base is strong and you feel confident, and that you have the clarity to engage in relationship with others in a clear way. I mean, we're all familiar with that kind of relationship archetype of people who feel like, oh my God, I've got so much baggage, I can't be in a relationship. Oh my God, I have so much happening that there may be validity to that. It may just be fear. It may be not wanting help. It may be feeling unworthy. There's a lot of possibilities. It's not necessarily just I can't be in a relationship. Because I've got so much going on and so much baggage. But perhaps. And now is the time when you can say, all right, I've cleared a lot of this up. I have the ability to resonate with my true being. Yes, there is a kind of a final phase of Saturn going through the fourth where I'm really going to, you know, not only empty the basement and roll back that rug and see what's there, but we're going to just sort of do a nice job and scrub the place down and give it a fresh, clean feeling. And I think more to the point, take full ownership of this inner dimension of yourself and feel what it feels like for there to be something strong and solid and also clear. All of this is a kind of emotional journey, I think, or at least rooted on the emotional level. And I would say take it slow and really notice where you're coming from. Really notice the clarity that you have attained. Now, this does lead to another question, a few other things, but one important question it leads to is there is a common phenomenon of having attained clarity and then realizing what a mess many people are, and then in a sense raising the bar on who you are willing to have in your life because you don't want to mess up that newfound clarity. a state of having earned, you know, your happiness. And it is true that it is important to recognize who you take in and what commitments that you make to them. But it's also helpful to have workable boundaries. And I think one of our concepts of boundaries is no means no, right? It's like the world walks around with a three-word book on the subject of boundaries, no means no. But what good is a boundary unless the door has a key and it opens, right? I mean, a wall without a door is useless. A wall with a door is what you want. And so I would say what you're looking for, looking to cultivate, is the sense of a wall with a door, perhaps windows, and to notice the condition on both sides of the door and make sure that you can confidently usher people in and out, that you know who's an appropriate guest for how long, and that you not have the idea that in any one momentary choice you make automatically leads to some permanent state of affairs. Saturn's going to be taking care of that. Saturn is going to be making sure that what shouldn't stick doesn't stick, and who shouldn't come in doesn't come in. And you know, imagine that every one of these unusual people that you've been attracting, and that's been going on for a while, you seem to have gained a grip on handling the unusual people. This is a very challenging phase of your life that you went through, where there were these people that were, you know, challenging. Uranian, the word in astrology, is who you struggle to handle, who pushed your stability. Now there's another influence that indicates, a set of influences that indicate that you have gone beyond that to the point where, first of all, you recognize there are diverse people with diverse viewpoints. Your relationship life is the story right now of diversity and of having options. And it may not be the options that you necessarily want, but that will change as you find your confidence and also as you rise to the occasion of the true nature of the people that you're attracting and your true nature. Now, one other property of Saturn going through your fourth house is that it is working in tandem with Neptune in your relationship house. Now, Neptune in your relationship house, as I explained, is a potential challenge because it can create the dreamy person who doesn't stick around. It can create the sense of isolation. It can create a blur of the boundary between fantasy and reality. It can create an opening where inappropriate people come through. It can create an invisible quality in the environment that you don't figure out till it's too late. Saturn coming through your fourth house, your personal emotional house, and in a sense leaning on that Neptune is saying that you have the chance to construct some clear ideas that are the result of an ongoing experiment. Saturn square Neptune is saying a number of different things, and this transit's going to go on for well over a year, and so this is certainly not the bottom line at all on Saturn square Neptune. And at this point, with that aspect, I'm just trying to draw, you know, kind of a baseline idea. And as part of that baseline idea, there is a synthesis between your sense of clarity, your sense of security, your sense of spiritual grounding, and the appropriateness of the conduct of others in your life, what they say to you, how they treat you, what they offer you, what they seem to want from you. And this is calling on you to take a very high level of responsibility for how you respond to what you experience. Indeed, choose what you experience as best you can. There's a lot of saying no that's going on in the world, and there's a lot of saying nothing that leads to the abdication of power. So between no and abdication, there's a lot of loss of control, and what I'm suggesting that you do is really get your yes, your no, and your I'm thinking about it clear for yourself, and that's the process of Saturn square Neptune. And I would say that the most important elemental idea of this, as I'm reading it, remember this is subjective and we're coming from my reality framework. I never intend to be an absolutely clear channel. I am working in the realm of values, and those of necessity have some polarity. But I would say that based on this astrology, what I'm seeing is that the first bottom line is that everyone is able to be honest with one another. And that should you ever be honest with someone and they are through with you, thank the heavens. Ah, I was me, and they said, no, I'm not interested in that. The second thing is to get a feeling for the fantasy that others have of you. We constantly walk around with fantasies of one another. There's a lot of projection that happens, and in a way, in our kind of intersubjective dimension of reality, right? We're not truly objective, we're not truly subjective. There's a kind of intersubjectivity. We kind of are always looking to one another for reflections, for confirmation and teaching, and kind of in an intermingled way, mutually experiencing one another's realities, that you be able to draw back from that as far as you can, extend yourself into it as far as you can, and get a feeling for, here's the practical way to say this, a feeling for what this other person's fantasy is of you, whoever it might be. It might be a friend, a coworker, a spouse, a love interest, an ex-lover, whoever it might be, a business partner, the public, it could be anything or anyone. What is their fantasy of you? What is the thing that they're imagining and trying to project onto you? It is almost inevitable, especially with Neptune in the seventh house. There's going to be that element of projection. And it's not that you can say, well, projection's bad, we have to get rid of it, because we're all doing it almost all the time, but rather, what is the projection? What is the content of that projection? And what is the implied statement of that projection? Said another way, do you like this person's fantasy of you? Can you abide that? And even better, how realistic is anyone else about you? To what extent do they really acknowledge the nuances and the obvious things about your life? To what extent are they open to your acknowledging obvious things about their life? And if you feel like you're having a fantasy that you don't like imposed on you, that's the time to wake up and pay attention. And fortunately for now, Neptune is not the only influence in your seventh. Chiron remains a very potent influence for cultivating awareness, for being clear about what's going on. Chiron is your very best barometer, portable weather station, canary in the coal mine, however you might think of it. And you have a probe inserted into this intersubjective business of everyone just sort of like trying to make up everyone else's mind for them. And Chiron is there providing you with a window, a gauge, into this whole dynamic. And what you have is the ability to sort of step out of it. I mean, Chiron gives the ability to step out of one reality and into another, if only temporarily, and to evaluate something from a new point of view. So one thing I would add to this discussion is that part of the benefit of openly having more than one important person in your life, which seems inevitable, is that you have multiple viewpoints available. There's one last point I want to make, and that is that on the day of this eclipse, there's an unusual aspect between unusual planets, and I give an extended discussion about this in the September 8th edition of Planet Waves FM in the second segment. I would recommend that it's really worth listening to. I may even put the audio here so you can just easily click on it. And that is the opposition of trans Pluto in your first house and Nessus in your seventh house. There's a lot going on in Pisces. Four slow-moving points are in Pisces, and there's a few in Virgo, but the one that I think is the most evocative is this hypothetical point called Trans-Pluto. And without getting too much into hypothetical points, it's just a calculated point. It's kind of like an idea floating around, but it's got an ephemeris and it's got an orbit, and some few astrologers watch it. And what fascinates me about Trans-Pluto is the way in which it focuses the issue of Virgo self-criticism. And so I'll give you the short version of that, and the long version of that is in Planet Waves FM. So I don't want to repeat it too much and take up too much time here, but the Virgo self-criticism is a real thing, and everyone experiences it because everyone has Virgo, but it has been the Virgos in my life who have helped me focus and become aware of this issue and say what it is. And it is another way of saying that, from my experience, there's something about the Virgo psyche that can be very, very hard on itself. Now, I recognize that this is, again, an endemic problem in our society, but let's talk about you. And now that Trans-Pluto, after 75 years in Leo, so let's see, thinking here, it transits into Leo in the mid-1930s. And then, 40s, 50s. 60-ish years in one sign. It's a long time. And now it took 3 years to transit into Virgo. And now it is in Virgo to stay for pretty much the rest of our lives. And this is raising the question of what is the nature of this? And how thin is this veil? How thin, how weak is this concept of self-criticism? It can seem so powerful. It can seem so debilitating. It can derail your goals and eat your confidence and eat your soul and all that. But what is it really? And what we get with Nessus making an exact opposition, by which I mean one arc minute opposition. Let me just do the math on that. The exactitude of this opposition is 360 times 60 equals 21,600. So you know how we talk about the 12 signs and 360 degrees of the zodiac and all that? Well, we're talking about a difference of 1/21,000th of the zodiac. That's how focused this is. And that's why I think it really deserves comment. And the comment I want to make is that there is a dynamic between certain people in your life and your self-criticism. There is also a dynamic between early childhood events and elements of self-criticism. There is a type of a partner that you may notice who, with any luck, will seem to you like a museum relic, a thing that is extinct and doesn't belong in living physical reality, of who I will call the betrayer. Now, the betrayer can also take up residence in you, and you may find that as you confront the betrayer in external reality, that you have to confront the inner betrayer in your own reality. And it is associated with this betrayal quality, is associated with a perfectionism dynamic of the expectation of perfectionism. I'm not perfect enough. This person expects me to be perfect. I expect them to be for blah, 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 blah. And this is, it is... two things. It is agonizing, and it is very likely a thing of the past if you can see it for what it is. The total healing on this may not have happened yet, but what is certainly available is that you no longer need to feel like you're just going to drop off of that abyss. And the dynamics in certain relationship environments are likely to become exceedingly clear, so clear that you can actually respond. How awesome is that? That you can actually make up your mind and you can see something and someone for what they are and also choose again. So one thing I'll say about your relationship experience is it does not exactly look like a wholly settled matter and, you know, that absolutely right person shows up and that's it. But what it does look like is that you are in a process of really learning the nature of the way in which your different let's say, environments interact to create your reality. And the three major environments I'm talking about are your sense of who you are is changing, your sense of your grounding and your history, almost like a separate body, almost like a separate person, right? There's me, and then there's the person that I was. That is changing rapidly and becoming ever clearer, and the integration now of who you are now and who you were and therefore are not is becoming clear. And this, in turn, is having an influence on your interpersonal dynamics with other people. And I think you'll be fine as long, fine meaning excellent, as long as you can keep an idea, a clear idea in your head of the power of projection, and you just make sure that you are, let's say, awakening from fantasy to a lucid dream where you know you're dreaming. And there's a big difference. And I think that fantasy is a kind of idle, passive thing, but the lucid dream, this is a place where you can learn to have influence and to notice who these dream figures are as seeming extensions of yourself, and ask yourself what they're doing there. What is the role? What say you, dream figure? What is your message for me? What do you have to offer me? Underlying all of this, I would add in conclusion of part two, is the dismantling of guilt. And by the dismantling of guilt, I primarily mean the dismantling of sexual guilt, which is the big daddy of all other forms of guilt. This is described by Pluto going through your fifth house, the claiming of pleasure, the claiming of freedom to experience yourself, the claiming of your ability to take risks, and the claiming back of your reality from every burden that every ancestor ever laid upon you. And parallel to that reality is removing the guilt on your freedom to seek and find your identity through your sexuality. I could probably talk about this all day, but with Aries, the sign of I am, on your eighth house, the house of the most profound sexual exchanges, combined with the transit of Pluto through the fifth, the other house of the most profound sexual exchanges, you have a lot of possibilities opening up in front of you. And if you remain in a conscious relationship to the guilt that you are dismantling, and that is often guilt that is wrapped in the sanctimonious bullshit of how you're supposed to have your relationships, because after all, grandma and grandpa had them that way, and mom and dad preached that or showed that, demonstrated that, or made some value in all the movies and all this stuff, and say, well, I relate this way. This is my choice of how to relate. And furthermore, whatever you people may say about one's sexuality being a commodity, this is the kind of profoundly entrenched bullshit of our society, particularly as we go manically commercial on everything, that you are the one in possession of your sense of self, and that you have a kind of a natural right to find yourself any way you want, and that includes to make a bold, conscious choice to find yourself through your sexuality, no matter what you need to do to get there. Assuming, of course, we're not talking about violence or violation of consent. Once we take away violence and violation of consent, then everything is a form of mutually agreed upon play. Now, this too does not argue for Leave It to Beaver, but it does present an opportunity for a real adventure in your life and the cultivation of relationships that are based on your actual authentic reality instead of someone's fantasy projection or the burden of the past being laid upon you. So it's like a be real now thing, and you have got it basically working for you from every possible angle of your astrology. Alrighty there, my Virgo cousin out on the ether someplace. It's a pleasure to do this reading, and I've got one more section for you, which is going to be astrology afterthoughts and peering into the window of the Voyager Tarot by the beautiful Dr. James Wanless. And in that spirit, I will catch you in a digital instant. Bye for now.